Good evening and welcome to the LibertarianChristians.com podcast. This is Norman Horn, your host, and tonight we are especially honored to be joined by a friend of mine by the name of Gil Guillory. Gil is a research associate with the Molinari Institute and is a libertarian writer and entrepreneur, and also a chemical engineer by trade, so we are brothers in arms to that effect as well. And he's here to talk about some of his work that he's done regarding libertarian entrepreneurship, something that he calls the subscription, patrol, and restitution model. And so we'll get into talking about what all this is, and so we're going to interview him, and he's going to tell us a little bit about this. So say hello to everyone, Gil.
Hello, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. This is definitely an honor to have you here tonight. So first off, what I want to begin with is, what is so bad about our current system of justice and policing in America? Right now we have, we have police, we have this all provided by the state. And what is so bad about this?
Well, I think the key thing to realize is that the provision of any good or service by the state is socialism. It's hard for us to think about this in modern terms, but we certainly would not stand in America for the production of bread by the state, and we wouldn't think that there was any sort of case to be made for the state to take over the production of bread. But the production of security, the same arguments apply to it. It's of course a much more complicated subject, but all of the traditional arguments that one can make against socialism, one can make against the socialist production of security. This has to do with the calculation problems, that is, how do we know whether what we're doing is of value? The knowledge problems that Hayek talked about, how do we know the local conditions of particular needs and wants and that we are fulfilling them? There are, of course, the incentive problems of socialism. It's a cliche that policemen eat donuts and loaf. Of course, not all of them do. But there are certain incentives and lack of certain incentives in the state system of policing that don't provide the proper incentives. And, of course, they also don't provide the proper amount of accountability. And this leads to enforcement error and enforcement abuse. All of these things I've summarized, actually, in an article on lewrockwell.com called Tax-Funded Policing is Socialism. It's, of course, a complicated subject, but everything that's wrong with socialism is wrong with socialism in security.
So what exactly is the answer, or at least your answer, to this problem?
Well, the answer that I've come up with, well, I wouldn't even say that I came up with it. The person who came up with it was Gustave de Molinari in 1849. Even before him, Thomas Aquinas wrote in his Summa Theologica, I happen to have the quote with me, "Persons in authority who are bound to safeguard justice on earth are bound to restitution, if by their neglect thieves prosper, because their salary is given to them in payment of their preserving justice." This is Thomas Aquinas. So really, this is Thomas Aquinas' idea, elaborated by Gustave de Molinari and then later authors like Murray Rothbard, David Friedman. And that is that there should be private security companies, and individual homeowners would pay this security company to do a multiple things. And I like to think of it as Terminix, but for crime, not termites.
Ah.
So I pay Terminix to guard against termites on my house, right? They set out little surveying areas around my house, and they check it from time to time, and they keep the termites away with their poisons and things. And then if a termite attacks my house, then they get rid of the termites, they treat the wood. If there's been any damage, they take care of the damage. And this is pretty much the same thing. Individual homeowners would pay a monthly subscription fee, and there would be patrol, and there would be newsletters on crime. But if there was a crime, we would investigate it. We'd facilitate a mediation or arbitration with the perpetrator. But if we can't find the perpetrator, or if we can't bring them into arbitration, then we would provide a semi-insurance function to indemnify people against the effects of the crime. And then we'd have various concierge services. You know, if they're out of town and they need their pets watered or their mail brought in, or they want special checks done on their houses. So that's kind of the idea in a nutshell.
So why do you think this should really be attempted? I mean, why should we choose this over what we currently have? Besides just the socialism problem, what other things are there that would motivate us to attempt this?
There are lots of ways to attack this. It's no hidden fact that I'm a libertarian, you know. Thoreau said that there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to the one who is striking the root. And I think that this business model strikes of that Hobbesian root for the justification for taxation and monopoly, because most people think of the state first and foremost as a provider of law and order. And to the extent that we can prove that this is not the case by successfully competing with police in the provision of services, being able to point to an example has lots and lots of benefits. There are lots of people who are not likely to even search out libertarian ideology or political philosophy generally, even to consider the alternatives. But if something is offered to them and it works, then they can be persuaded by facts that are before them without even having to engage the philosophical arguments. So my primary reason for this is ideology. I think that it will advance liberty. But and I thought that was a some sort of detriment to putting together this business model. But as I started researching this area, you have best-selling business books like Built to Last by Jim Collins and Jerry Poros that show that ideology is actually a comparative advantage in business. So this ideological foundation, I think, is what supports why we should launch this sort of business.
Cool. So effectively what you're saying is that this myth that surrounds government-sponsored policing can be trashed and, you know, it can be exposed for what it is as a myth, as a lie, if we as entrepreneurs go out and fill the void where it needs to be filled.
Right. And I have a lot to say about this idea in a paper that Patrick Tinsley and I wrote for Libertarian Papers. That's libertarianpapers.org. And in that paper, we talk about the role of the entrepreneur in sculpting social institutions. You know, the establishment of a subscription patrol and restitution business model creates all sorts of derived demand for a whole host of other institutions that libertarians want to have wider purchase in society. You know, mediation, you have arbitration, empowering families to be responsible for their security. And then the subscription patrol and restitution service also acts as a mediating institution to broker between the charitable foundations and the needs in the community. You know, there are usually two things that are a problem for a nonprofit. You know, the way that this subscription patrol and restitution business model would work is we would be policing in a community policing mode. And so we would go and we would find problems in the community. Maybe there's a child who's abusing animals, or maybe there's a man who's recently lost a job, or maybe there's a recent divorce. These are all known in the criminological literature as at-risk conditions that could predispose the children in those situations to criminal behavior. And so it's in the best interest of the community to address those in some way. And so the community policing would be to try to find some of those things and then connect these people in need up with the local charities that handle this sort of thing. And so not only would you be serving the purposes of reducing crime, but you would also be ministering to the particular social ill that happens to be there. Maybe it's a family who's going through a rough financial time or what have you. And these charities, you know, they really have two problems. One is finding people to minister to. And then the other problem is finding people willing to support them in their ministries. And so what's nice about the subscription patrol and restitution business model is that it actually serves both sides of those coins. And so it strengthens the communities and the nonprofits in that community. It's a long thing to say about this.
No, that's all right. That's really interesting. I think this is, you know, you've talked about this before, and I've heard you speak about this in a variety of situations, just in our personal conversations. And that's definitely some stuff that I hadn't heard before as well. So this is absolutely fascinating. So Now, what SPR is, and we know why it should be attempted. We kind of know a little bit about how it's going to work now. So the big question is what you describe really legal?
Well, yes, it is. I had a number of initial questions. Is it legal? Is it basically a viable business model? Are there any stoppers, you might say? And so that's what I started to do is I went down this list of things, basic viability, and we wrote a whole paper titled The Legal Landscape for Subscription Patrol and Restitution in Texas. And I co-authored that with Carrie Citron.
Do you have that published yet?
That's not published in the sense of being in any journal, but I do maintain a web archive at gil.guillory.googlepages.com where I keep all of my research, the papers, the PowerPoint presentations, PDF files. In the case of, for instance, our actuarial paper, we've got all of the data, all of the Monte Carlo simulations. You can download the Excel file and run your own Monte Carlo simulations. So all of that research is Creative Commons attribution license. So anybody can just take it and run with it. My intention is to stimulate other people to be interested in developing this business model. If tomorrow someone read all of my research and said, wow, this is really great, I know a lot about patrol, I'm going to start my own business, I would be super happy. Because my intention is to get that social institution rolling. By profession, I'm not a security professional, and I've had to do a lot of learning to get to the point where I can actually produce valuable research in this area. So more power to anybody who maybe is listening to this podcast, wants to get into this. I am happy to help.
So, Gil, the $40 question here for all the entrepreneurs like myself listening to this is, are you going to be able to make money with this? Do average people really want this service?
Well, I just completed a paper titled Marketing Subscription Patrol and Restitution. I took all the marketing work that we'd done back in 2006, and then I had done some back in 2008. And then in 2009, we did two more marketing surveys and put it all together. So this paper is a summary of all the marketing work we've done to date. And in short, the price points that we've been envisioning are just about right. If anything, they're low. People are saying they would expect to pay more. And the number of people indicating a likelihood to buy is very high, around 70%. That 70%, that should translate into enough real demand to make the business viable. You know, when you ask somebody, would you purchase a product like this? Of course, a stated intention to buy is always a higher percentage than people actually forking money over, right? But we think that the business is likely to be viable if in a certain geographic area, 10 to 20% of people are subscribers, then we think that we can make it viable based on the patrol studies we've done. And that's on par with home monitoring services. Home monitoring services are about 20% of households in the U.S. Subscribe to home monitoring services. And, of course, the percentage goes up as the home valuations go up.
So when do you expect to start this business, or are you intending to do so in the near future?
My intention is to start it as soon as I can. And there are a couple of tricks about this, okay? One is I'm not a high-risk taker, and it's a brand-new business model. It's never been tried, and so I'm trying my best to nail down all the risks as best I can. As a matter of fact, I called a marketing research outfit in Dallas that specializes in home services marketing, and I told her all of the things that I had researched. And I said, well, you know, what's my next step on marketing research? And she said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I just want to be relatively certain that this will actually be purchased by consumers. And she said, well, are you going after venture capital funds? Are you trying to do this or that? I said, no. This is a low capital intensive business. It's just salaries for the most part. So it's a shoestring startup type thing. So she said, well, no, you've done enough already. Anything you do now is just to make you feel better. I said, okay. So I did another couple of marketing studies. And then I
So you're almost ready to go.
Yeah, well, on the marketing side, sure. But there are other things. And really, the things that's holding me back is finding and assembling a really good execution team. I really need to find people who know about patrol, geographic information systems, mediation, sales, and so forth. I have some people. I made a recent contact with a criminal justice graduate, and that may pan out as a good person who will be a good contact for patrol. I have a GIS contact, and maybe over the course of this year we'll do some research, and that'll work out for me. And so I'm continuing to build this, but it's all about having that right execution team. Of course, again, anyone who's listening to this that might be interested in joining the team is encouraged to contact me. I mean, I'm very interested in getting any and all expertise that will be required to start up a business like this on board to further develop the business plan.
We're about out of time, so I just want to see if you have any more closing comments or parting words of wisdom that you'd like to give to our listeners here tonight.
Oh, gosh, that's a really open-ended question. I guess I'll just, again, say I have a full archive of writings on subscription patrol and restitution at gil.guillory.googlepages.com, and I have popularized some of that work in some articles on lewrockwell.com. I know what I could do. I can tell you what I'm working on this year. You know, you were asking me, what does it take for me to get to my next step, right? Well, I have four projects in the hopper for this year. One of them is on searches, which is a derivative of this. One of the things that we found out while doing this research is there are questions that are on the table for libertarians that statists just don't even think to ask. One question we have was, well, the state security, they have this power of warranted searches, whereas our private security force will not have that power. And so our question is, well, how does that affect clearance rates? Would we expect them to be better at clearing crimes than we would be? And this is a very difficult question to ask, but in broad terms, we started to ask this question, and then we wanted to know, well, how does this affect real money? Because, you know, if we don't clear a crime, then we have to pay an indemnity. So we bring it all back to dollars. And when you bring it all back to dollars, it turns out that if you make these gross, wild assumptions about clearance rate differentials, that the monetary cost of having warranted searches, the utility of them is very small. And so we're doing a whole paper on this now, because it's very interesting. Another thing that we're doing is we're doing a paper on mediation casework and how that needs to be done to support arbitrations. Let's say you're arbitrating a case of an assault, and so someone has battered another person. You know, you have the objective damages of what is it that cost, what were the medical bills to treat the abrasions or the bruises or whatever it was. But then you also have the subjective cost of, you know, the fact that this person was assaulted. Their privacy, their person was violated, and so forth. How does an arbitrator know? And this is actually a general legal question. And it's been dealt with many different ways in various historical legal systems. And so we're going to review that, and we're going to talk about how we would propose to do a modern model that uses mediation casework to answer those types of questions. So I know that's a long spiel about another project that we're working on. And then we're also working on a geographic information systems project to nail down how we would do incident-based crime reporting and the relevant actuarial calculations for incident-based data, as opposed to grouped data, which is what our initial first actuarial paper used, group data. So those are some of the projects that we're working on over the year. And of course, if somebody wants to join any of those projects, I am happy to bring them on board.
Thank you once again, Gil, for coming on and talking with me here for a few minutes, and just really appreciate what you're doing, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this LibertarianChristians.com podcast with Gil Guillory. This is your host, Norman Horn. We'll see you next time.